In part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
That's a great idea. You could do it right now with a telephone call to 217-244-9455. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and it is also our WILL February membership campaign. Our goal this week is to begin raising the funds to pay for programs like the Afternoon Magazine. And as a listener-supported radio station, we count on you to help us do that. And, you know, if there's one thing we've learned about our listeners, it's that you're not the type of people who sit around and watch the world go by. Our news programs give you information that shapes the way you think about important issues and often inspire you to get involved. And the music and entertainment programs you enjoy here on AM 580 can guide you to concerts, theaters, and books that enrich your life. There's a tremendous value in that. And this week, today included, we're asking you to place a dollar value on that in the form of a gift. Join the friends of WILL. The amount is up to you. The basic membership, though, is $40. Maeve Riley, who is the editor of our program guide, Patterns Magazine, is standing by in Pledge Central. Maeve, what's involved in becoming a member of the Friends?
Well, it'll just take a few minutes of your time, and we have some phone volunteers, Charlie, Jennifer, and Valerie, sitting by waiting to take your call. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. They'll just fill out a sheet very quickly while you're talking to them, and then you're good to go. And if you do make a pledge at the $40 level or above, you'll receive Patterns, which is our monthly program guide that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on the March issue right now. And it promises to be a thrilling one. So
yeah,
if you get your pledge in, you'll get Patterns and know all about what's going on at WILL.
Yeah, AM, FM, and television.
Mm-hmm.
All the listings for all the programs on the three stations can be found in Patterns Magazine. $40 is the basic membership, as we've mentioned. And there's another incentive, Maeve. We still have some gift certificates to World Harvest Foods, right?
Right. If you have never, ever, ever made a pledge to WILL, World Harvest will mail you a $10 gift certificate if you make a pledge during this drive. All you have to do is call 217-244-9455. The volunteer will ask if you're a new friend. Just tell them that, and then World Harvest will gladly send you a $10 gift certificate.
Okay, again, that number, 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. You can also join online at Will Pledge, that's WILLpledge.org. And thanks to everyone who has joined us so far this week. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Linguist Deborah Tannen writes books for general readers. When she's asked why write for general readers, why not stick to academic articles and books, she replies that she's always wanted to write books her mother could read. Tannen says her mother has been, on some level, her first audience and the ultimate judge of all her deeds. The bond between mother and daughter is a powerful one, and it is the subject of Deborah's latest book, You're Wearing That? Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. Deborah Tannen is our guest in this portion of the program. With her help, we'll look at the ways in which mothers and daughters talk with one another, and we'll see what we can do to improve those conversations. Listeners, I invite you to join this conversation with your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Deborah Tannen is a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University. She's the author of many books, including You Just Don't Understand, which was on the New York Times bestseller list for 3 years. Her new book, You're Wearing That, Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation, is available from Random House. And you'll find her on the web at www.deborahtannen.com. And also later this month, on February 23rd, you'll find her in Chicago at Transitions Book Place for an event, and Transitions is at 1000 West North Avenue in Chicago. She will be at Transitions Book Place on Thursday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. But we're happy to have her here this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon, Deborah Tannen. How are you?
Hi. What a pleasure to be here, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
You're very welcome. You begin this book by taking note of the power of mother-daughter conversation. You say these conversations can be the best and they can be the worst. They can be healing or hurtful. What is it that imbues these conversations with so much power?
It seems that this really is the mother of all relationships. Mothers and daughters are extremely close. Of course, in the beginning, it's a physical closeness, and then as the daughters get older, it can be more or less close, and that's the challenge, whether they agree on the level of closeness. But because they're both women, we talk to each other in ways that become especially intense. First of all, there's simply the amount of talk. Mm. And I discussed in You Just Didn't Understand, the way I put it there was, talk is the glue that holds a relationship together for girls and women more than it is the case for boys and men. But in writing this one, I added, and it's also the explosive that can blow it apart. Mm. Because if you're talking to each other so much and about such personal topics, then the risk of saying the wrong thing becomes greater. There's also the double meaning of caring and criticizing. The biggest complaint that I heard from daughters, and this is about adult daughters, was my mother's critical. The biggest complaint I heard from mothers of adult daughters was, I don't know why she's so sensitive. She takes everything as criticism. Mm. So I feel like I'm walking on eggshells when I talk to her. This feeling that you're having an amiable conversation and then suddenly something explodes it and you're not, neither is sure why, except both thinks, each one thinks the other introduced the note of contention. And often it traces to comments where the mother is being helpful and caring, and the daughter hears criticism, mm-hmm. and they're both there. So to some examples, often it's about what I call the big three, hair, clothes, and weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, in a way, this was one of the most enjoyable parts of doing this research. Every woman that I talked to had her own comments she had archived that her mother had made, and usually it was about hair, clothes, and weight. So, for example, your hair looks so beautiful when it's combed back, but said when her hair is not combed back. So the mother thinks she's saying something nice, and the daughter feels she's being criticized for how her hair looks now. Or, those pants don't flatter you, dear. And the daughter hears, you're telling me I'm fat. Mm. And the mother thinks she didn't say that. She's just helping out in terms of her appearance. I can count on my mother to notice if I gain a pound. And, of course, the title of the book, You're Wearing That.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think in all these kinds of comments, the mother really is showing caring. After all, that's her job, to help her daughter improve, be her best, look her best. But anything that you say to help someone improve implies they're doing something wrong. And that's the side that the daughter often hears. I want to add right here that everything that I say about mothers to daughters also can happen daughters to mothers. And I picked the title, You're Wearing That, particularly because it could be said by a daughter to a mother as well, and it frequently is, especially when the daughter's a teen, but not only.
Probably beginning at about age 11.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Maybe 9.
Yeah. On the hair thing, you know, one woman you talked with told you that when this topic came up, she simply says, I'm sorry, my lifetime interest in the topic of my hair has been exhausted.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's great. How does that response work for daughter and mother?
Well, what it's saying is, I want you to focus on things that I think are more important. My hair is not the most important thing about me. And what's interesting, too, is I don't think mothers, or if it goes the other way, daughters, really intends that because I'm commenting on your hair, that's the only thing I care about.
Mm.
But that is what comes across. And often these are comments that were made in a context where you expected something else to be commented on. So, you know, for example, a woman had her picture in the paper. She had accomplished something. And her mother's comment was, I could see you didn't have time to get your bangs cut.
Mm.
So to her, at that point, the comment meant, your appearance matters more than what you accomplished. And I think that's what the woman had in mind who said, my lifetime interest in my hair has been exhausted.
And tell us how you handled that question from your mom. Do you like your hair that long?
Well, this was funny because it was toward, I was doing research on the book at the time, and my mother I was very lucky. She lived to be 93. So this, and she actually passed away before I had finished writing the book. But this was toward the end. And so the research was going on, and when I came to visit and she said, do you like your hair that long? And I laughed, and she looked kind of hurt and asked why, and I said, well, it's just that all the women I'm talking to are telling me that their mothers are critical of their hair. And she said, I wasn't criticizing, so I didn't want to hurt her feelings, so I let it drop. But then a little bit later, I asked, so, Mom, what do you think of my hair? And she said, without missing a beat, I think it's a little too long.
Yeah.
So, and what she was doing is what I call crying literal meaning, and that's something we all do. When we have not put into words our meaning, we are only implying it, we feel that we can backtrack and deny having meant it. So I was just asking, but often, especially with family members, and again, mothers and daughters are perhaps an intense form of this, the meaning isn't coming only from the current conversation, but all the ones you've had before.
Yeah.
So that was a continuing theme. My mother's constant refrain with me was, your hair needs a trim.
Mm-hmm. There's no vacuum, is there, in mother-daughter relationships? I'm curious, did you talk with your mother about her relationship, the conversations she had with her mother?
Well, this was interesting. She was quite typical of the women I interviewed and talked to. She felt that she had a much better relationship with her daughters than she had had with her mother. The idea that a daughter and a mother should on any level be friends, which is, I think, quite widespread today, was not on the table at all in her time. So her mother took care of her, and then actually my mother was born in Russia, and so when she was young, she was 11 when she came to this country. So her mother, she was kind of taking care of her mother in a way because her mother was never really adjusted to life here. And that frequently happens, of course. If it's not an immigration story, then it may simply be when our mothers get older, or even in terms of technology where even very young daughters are more comfortable with email and messaging than their mothers are, that there often is a kind of a switch where the daughter is the one who's protective, the one who is informing, the one who is caretaking. But you're still mother-daughter, and
right. That
doesn't change. There's another anecdote I tell, again, toward the end, and I was visiting my mother, and she was pretty weak, and she was tiny. I'm 5'9", and she was 5'2", at her full height, and was probably more like 4'11", toward the end. And I was lying on the couch, just lying down to take a nap, and I felt some movement at my legs and opened my eyes, and my mother had come in with her cane in one hand and a blanket, which she had put over the other arm. that she had brought from the foot of her bed and was spreading the blanket over my legs. Mm-hmm. And I was so touched. It's one of my most precious memories.
Yeah.
Because, again, there she was taking care of me during a time that I was probably doing a lot more caretaking of her.
Yeah. And it also takes us back to your previous book, I Only Say This Because I Love You, where one of the chapters was titled, I'm Still Your Mother.
Yeah. In fact, this book really expands that chapter. That book was about all adult family relationships, and the responses that I got were disproportionately to the mother-daughter. One journalist was interviewing me about that book, but she was asking me about mothers and daughters, and she kind of blurted out, what is it about mothers and daughters? And I realized I wanted to be able to answer that question.
Yeah, yeah. How do conversations between mothers and daughters change as we age?
Well, I think they evolve continually, and it's a continual negotiation of how close do we want to be? How distant do we want to be? Are we the same? Are we different? And I think often as the daughter gets older and needs her mother less, mothers sometimes make more effort to be involved because for all girls and women, again, this connection is often what we seek. So women and girls, more than boys and men, are very hurt by being left out. And the older a daughter gets, the more a mother is likely to feel and, in fact, to be left out. So often what develops is that the mother wants more of a best friend relationship with her adult daughter. She feels her daughter is the one who she should talk to frequently about her loneliness if she has been widowed, for example. Often is the case when they're older. And this introduces a whole new level of meanings that people are hearing, where the daughter might feel somewhat guilty because she really can't be that best friend and she really can't keep her mother company all the time. So an example just I recently encountered where the mother called her daughter and began the conversation, I miss you.
Mm.
You know, had she said this to a friend, the friend would say, oh, I miss you too, and then they'd go mm-hmm. on and talk. In this case, the daughter kind of bristled and she said, why do you miss me? We just saw each other a week ago.
Mm.
And the mother realized that she heard it as implying, you should have called me.
Hmm.
So that's a level that often gets introduced later.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's going on in these messages and how they're sent and received. You know, let's maybe if we can untangle the tangle of it all. In the book, you talk about message and meta-message. What do you mean?
The message is the meaning of the words, and we always agree on that. The meta-message is what I'm intending, what I'm implying. What does it say about our relationship that I say this in this way at this time? Everything has a meta-message. It's not something sneaky. Some messages are direct and others have meta-messages, but that we always have meta-messages telling us how we're supposed to interpret this. Is it a joke?
Hmm.
Is it a way of being solicitous? Am I trying to get closer, getting further apart? And so that's where the differences often come in. So if the mother, for example, like my mother saying to me, do you like your hair that long? The message was the question, but the meta message was, I think it's a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something really, really interesting. I think mothers often feel that they that their true caring is not appreciated. And in other words, the meta message of caring they're sending is not seen. And often it makes them feel that the daughter doesn't really pay attention to them. They kind of feel powerless. They can't get the daughter to do what they so obvious to them that she should do. When the daughter was younger, they could get her to do it. And what's really ironic here is that I think the mother and the daughter, typically underestimates her own power and overestimates the others. So often the comments that the mother is making shows her feeling of powerlessness. To the daughter, she looms like a giant.
Mm.
And we see it as an exercise of her power that she keeps bringing it up. But we know whatever it is she thinks we should do. Move closer to where you work or rearrange your living room or and always the big three of hair, clothes, and weight. And so often it's helpful to the daughter to realize that this is maybe an expression of the mother's really wanting to be helpful. She, rather than reaching for something to criticize, she may be reaching for a way that she can still be of use now that her daughter is grown and doesn't need her in quite the obvious way she did before.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, linguist Deborah Tannen. Her latest book is You're Wearing That, Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. My name is Celeste Quinn. And listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. Join this conversation with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. I have a friend whose mom is a wonderful character. She's kind of like Auntie Mame, only she has this daughter, and they're very close. But years ago, they had a rocky relationship. And because her mom is kind of a larger-than-life character, my friend once told me that her friends, this is my friend's friends, once they met her mom, they liked her mom better than her. Ugh.
Yeah.
And, you know, this raises, you know, the issue of competition, perhaps, or a mom not tuning in to where her daughter is.
Well, there's often a level of competition. And something interesting in what you just said, my friends like my mother better than me. Why does it have to be a comparison? Mm. But it is. Mothers and daughters seem always to look at each other as the yardstick by which we measure ourselves. And so, you know, am I as pretty as or prettier than my mother, my daughter? As successful as, more successful than my mother, my daughter? That's very common among anybody who's close. Research actually shows that. But there was one study that just really blew me away. It was a study of whether children's success made the parent feel more or less good about themselves. And so they looked at fathers and mothers and daughters and sons. So there's four possible constellations. The only constellation in which the child's success made the parent feel worse about themselves was the mother and the daughter. Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
So there seems to be a particular inclination to compare there. And so sometimes it's the mother feeling, perhaps, even though she's very pleased and proud of her daughter's success, she may feel envious on some level because the daughter had advantages she didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
She may feel, even though she is thrilled to see her daughter soar, she also feels somehow left behind as she sees her receding in the sky. And the same goes the other way. So if you have a very attractive, very successful mother, it may make you feel like you're never going to measure up. And so all these are parts of the relationship. If there is a father in the home and the daughter is very close to the father, then it's almost like the in-house version of the threat from the younger woman, which we all women always are aware of on some level. And I write in the book about how I was one of these daughters who was especially close with my father and quite critical of my mother for much of my life, and really quite impatient of her obvious jealousy. And it continued even to the very end. I could be talking to her on the phone for hours, and then when I asked to speak to my father, she would say something about how, I know you'd rather talk to him than to me, which is probably true. But in fact, I always talked to her more. And I was pretty critical of that until I started writing the book and really starting to look at it from the mother's point of view. I don't have daughters myself. I don't have children. So it was only in writing this book that I really was forced to ask myself what everything looked like from the mother's point of view. And just observing other families where I was a guest, seeing a teenage daughter ignoring her mother and showering the father with attention, I really began to understand that level of competition.
Yeah. Also, maybe it also has to do a little bit with, I know how to push a button here.
Yeah. And, you know, my students, I teach at Georgetown, and my students have been so helpful in writing about their own experiences, and they write about them analytically in papers they write for class. And several students have commented that talking about this dynamic really gave them sympathy for their mothers for the first time. And I remember one in particular writing, she really made a point when she went home to spend time with her mother. And she just hadn't thought about it. You know, mm-hmm. we tend to take mothers for granted. They're always there. And it's one of many ways that I think the mother being the woman is very plays a big role, just as we expect more of daughters than of sons. Many women told me, if my son doesn't call for a couple of weeks, I really don't even notice. But if my daughter doesn't call, I'm quite annoyed with her.
Yeah.
She's come to expect more communication, and so she resents it when she doesn't get it.
Yeah. And moms are not always going to be there, as you know. Did this project change your relationship with your mother while she was still alive, or make you more aware of the treasure it was and continues to be in memory?
Yes, it did very much. And I think, I honestly think that it made it a better book because of going through what I was at that time. Of course, the fact that she was getting weaker and I knew that she wasn't, that the end was within sight, also made me appreciate things about her. But so many of the women I talked to said that when their mothers were sick, they came to appreciate even what they would have resented in the past. One story that I loved was a woman who went to visit her mother in the hospital in intensive care, and the first thing her mother said was, "When's the last time you did your roots?" And she was so happy. And then her mother was okay. She was herself.
Yeah.
So I think I probably went through something like that. And also, the physical caretaking made me appreciate the level of love that sweeps over you when you are doing that kind of physical caretaking of someone. And clearly that's what mothers did with their children when they were small.
Yeah, yeah. That is really... That's, I guess, a meta message is that we hope to hear in one way or another is that I care for you.
And let me tell you another one that was so interesting. Because hair was such a big one, and one woman told me how she just couldn't stand it. Her mother always commented that her hair was flat. And one time she went to visit, and the first thing her mother said was, let me get some mousse and fluff up your hair. And she was so annoyed. But then a little bit later in the visit, the daughter offered to fix her mother's hair and fixed it with mousse. And she said, you know, she felt kind of bad because when she left, it looked really pretty weird, stiff with all this mousse. And yet, when she spoke to her mother the next day, her mother said how happy she was that they had fixed each other's hair and that she had even told her best friends about it. And it really kind of highlighted that this is a kind of meta message of intimacy. Especially physically playing with people's hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I had quite a similar experience and insight. I commented when I was doing the research, and I asked my sister if my mother ever commented on her hair, and she said my mother always told her hair was too short, and so we laughed so much because she always thought mine was too long. And then my sister said, well, you know, her hair never looked good either. And while we laughed some more, you know, it's true, it's not like she's some kind of hair maven. And then I realized that frequently, especially toward the end, I would tell her that her hair didn't look good, and I would fix it for her. And I never had any indication that she minded. She, too, seemed to really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's that level of intimacy that is inextricable from attention to an attribute of your body like hair. But depending on where you are in your relationship at that time, you may either value or not value that meta-message. And there's always the risk that the meta-message you're going to hear more loudly is the meta-message of criticism, that you don't look good.
Mm. Well, your sister's hair was too short and yours was too long.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what would have been the message to the third girl if there was a third daughter.
There is. I have a third sister.
Oh, do you? Okay.
In her case, it was her clothing.
Oh, okay.
My mother didn't bug her about her hair. She bugged her about her clothing. she had something for each of us.
That's good. Share the wealth. You know, it's interesting. A couple of times in the last few years, I had the great pleasure of being with my mother and on and her sister, my aunt. And it struck me on two occasions, two different occasions, you know, months or maybe it might have even been longer apart. My aunt turned to my mother and said, "She looks good, Marty." And I thought, what a kind of a strange thing to say, you know, but I thought, well, thanks, Norma, for saying that I look good. And what she was telling my mother, I think, was, Marty, you've done a good job here.
Exactly. And yeah, and as you know, I do write about that, that both mothers and daughters feel that the other represents us to the world. Mm. And mothers in particular tend to be either credited or blamed for whatever happens to their children. So if the daughter looks good, then she did a good job. If the daughter looks weird, then she did a bad job. And, of course, women in our culture are judged by appearance more than men. Plus, the range we have to choose from is much greater. Mm-hmm. We don't have a choice of just having kind of an average, you know, nondescript hairstyle or style of dress. And so mothers do have a stake in it when they are critiquing our appearance. But also, and this kind of gets back to something you said before, we subject each other to a level of scrutiny that we otherwise tend to reserve for ourselves. Mm. And we women often are studying the mirror, scrutinizing ourselves for the pimple or whether our hair should be pushed back or pulled forward or cut short or cut longer, straighter, curlier, you know, all these options that we have. And so the putting that kind of attention on the mother or our mother or our daughter, it's just an extension of that. But I think often the one who is paying attention doesn't realize that the scrutiny itself can make that pimple bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, it's through a magnifying glass.
Yeah, exactly. We are so close that we see each other as if through a magnifying glass. And another metaphor that I use there, you know, if you hold a magnifying glass up to the sun, it can start a fire, and that's kind of what happens. The daughter's, you could say the daughter's desire for approval is the kindling, and the mother's scrutiny is the sun's rays, and put it through the magnifying glass, and you get a conflagration.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, I'd love to hear from you this afternoon. If you have something to add to the conversation, we'd love to have you join us. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Our guest is linguist Deborah Tannen. Her latest book is You're Wearing That? Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. Again, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener now who's joining us on line four in Charleston. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm at work, and I'm listening to your radio program, and I absolutely, your book sounds absolutely wonderful, and I am realizing things that I guess I kind of always knew about my mother and our relationship, but I'm just wanted to say I'm very excited about actually reading it and sending it to my friends as well.
Thank you. People are telling me that, first of all, they love knowing they're not alone. Hearing conversations that you thought only you had and realizing that others are having the same ones in itself is reassuring. It also opens up conversations, and often a lot of this, it's just helpful to talk about it with your mother or your daughter. Talk about how the way they're talking to you is making you feel rather than just arguing on the message level. You know, everybody else likes my hair. I don't know why you don't. That kind of thing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Other questions, comments are invited, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Have you heard from mothers and daughters and mothers, about who have looked at the book, who have read the book, who have said now, you know, your book has opened a door for us, and when it starts to go haywire, we can say, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And tease it apart.
Absolutely. The response has been completely overwhelming. I had an excerpt of the book in the Washington Post even before the publication date, and it is available, by the way, on my website, which is DeborahTannen.com. I got 200 emails within 24 hours.
Wow.
So people are saying, yeah, this gives me an opportunity to try doing something different. And just to give you an example, a specific one, the woman who called her daughter and said, I miss you, and the daughter thought that she was telling her that she should have called, she tried something that I actually suggest in the book, which is try email, because it's less intrusive. The daughter doesn't need a big block of time. She doesn't need to hear that jangling phone when she's in the middle of something else. And so the mother sent the daughter an email, which she had sent emails before, but never substantive. It had always been, you know, meet me at this time. And in it, she made a point to praise her. This is really interesting, because so often mothers feel that they need to be helpful and forget that praise can be hugely helpful. So she just praised her, supported, said something she was doing was obviously the right thing to do, and she was sure everything would go well. And she was blown away. Her daughter called her the next night, and then the night after again. So it was just that little change of communicating in a slightly different way was getting a very different response. So I've been hearing a lot of that.
Yeah. Also, though, you can run into some difficulties with email, with IM. You know, it presents challenges as well as possibilities.
Oh, absolutely. Because you don't have the nonverbal to give that meta message. You know, how do I mean this?
Yeah.
So you don't have facial expression and tone of voice. And the other problem is if something is taken wrong, you don't know it. So you might be going on and on and on with your email, digging yourself in deeper by the minute.
Ooh.
And not realizing that something you said way back put it on the wrong track. So it's true. I mean, all these things have both, they can amplify both the good and the bad.
Yeah, you don't see someone's eyes rolling.
Exactly. That's the classic daughter response, especially when she's a teenager, isn't it?
Yeah.
The eye roll.
Eye roll and, oh, Mom.
But again, something I learned in doing the research for this book, I knew how often daughters get together and complain about their mothers. I didn't realize how often mothers got together to complain about their daughters.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's also true.
Yeah. Any insights along the way that you gained in terms of grandmothers and granddaughters in conversation?
Yeah. The grandmother relationship is fascinating because it can be both a lot better or a lot worse. So if the grandmother is being critical of the granddaughter in the same way that she was of her daughter, it can create problems not only with the granddaughter, but even more with her own daughter. So, you know, for example, a grandmother who says she'd look so pretty if she combed her hair, and then this makes the daughter remember that her mother was always at her to brush her hair. And another level of meta message, her mother always thought she wasn't feminine enough, would have preferred a more traditionally feminine daughter. It can bring up a lot of negative feelings. And if a mother feels that the granddaughter is critical of her daughter, she will hesitate to bring up aspects of her life that the mother would otherwise like to share. Mm. And so again, you get this, she's hurt because she's left out. But you can also get a very wonderful thing where the mother of the granddaughter, in other words, the woman in the middle, it's wonderful because it gives her a way to communicate with her own mother that doesn't focus on one of them. It focuses outside on somebody else that they really love. And she might really appreciate the help she gets from her mother. And it may even be an area where she is looking for advice, especially at the very beginning.
Yeah. What did you do, Mom? Yeah. Yeah.
And I heard the whole range. I heard a horror story, or what was told to me as a horror story, about the mother who didn't want to go home because she said, I can't trust them with the baby, which the person telling me this thought was an unforgivable thing to say, to the mother who told me that her mother came and stayed for 3 months, and she said, You know, my mother wasn't going to leave me with this baby. I didn't know how to take care of a baby, and she told it to me with approval. And this is so important to keep in mind, because in all the things that I write about and all the examples I give, there's never a clear right and wrong way to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a function of the people in the conversation, what each one of them is interpreting, and the kind of communication that they would like.
Yeah.
And it often, you know, we talk to the other the way we want the other to talk to us, but that may not be the way they would like us to talk to them.
Yeah. When it comes to grandmothers, I had one of each. And that was fine. I loved them both dearly. But, yeah, it was interesting. And it was also interesting to see how close my mother was with her mother. And not as close with her mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say about mother-in-law.
Well, the one thing that I would say is when I talk to women who were close either to their mother or mother-in-law when they had a good relationship, told me they had a good relationship, very often what they mentioned was she doesn't offer advice, she doesn't criticize unless I ask for advice, or the mother or mother-in-law saying, I bite my tongue. It's hard. My tongue is bleeding. But I make a real effort. One said her mantra is, don't advise, don't criticize.
Yeah.
So there is some evidence that that really is something that a mother or mother-in-law can quite consciously do.
Yeah. Was there any one thing that mothers and daughters told you was most precious about their conversations, their relationship?
Yeah, and it would almost come maybe as a surprise, but it was the interest in the tiny little things.
Mm.
Who else can I tell that I got a good deal on toilet paper?
The
feeling that there's somebody who is interested in every tiny aspect of your life.
Yeah.
And I think that often is what people miss.
Yeah, mothers and daughters are probably never going to say to one another, that's more detail than I need.
Exactly.
Tell me more.
Exactly.
Yeah. There we've got to leave it. We've used up the time. It's been a delight talking with you this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
You're very welcome. Linguist Deborah Tannen has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Her latest book is You're Wearing That, Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. You will find Deborah Tannen on the web at www.deborahtannen.com. You'll find her in Chicago later this month at Transitions Book Place. That's Thursday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. So if you're listening in the Chicago area, you might want to mark that on your calendar. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Maeve Riley is with us this afternoon in Pledge Central. She is the editor of our Patterns magazine, which is our monthly program guide here for WILL AM, FM, and TV. And it is yours, that monthly program guide, with a membership at the $40 level or above. Maeve, this is our February membership campaign. Where do we need to be by the end of the day today? Where are we at the moment?
Well, we'd like to get to $17,000 by the end of the day today, and right now we're at $13,422. So we've got a little ways to go, but we can get there. We just need one call at a time. 244-9455 is the number to call. We'd especially like to encourage people who've never made a pledge before to give us a call. World Harvest, a great friend of WILL, will mail you a $10 gift certificate, and they want to encourage listeners to become supporters with this incentive. 244-9455 is the number to call.
And you can help us make that goal today by giving us a call. Have you done it? Have you stepped up and made a pledge of financial support? Have you, you know, made your fair share here? $40 is a basic membership. We're hoping, especially this week, I think, to hear from new friends. New friends are so important because, you know, listener support is now almost half of our supplies, almost half of the revenue that we have to support the station, the programs that you hear here on AM 580. So it's very important that we hear from you. If without your support, we'd be in a world of trouble. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. 217-244-WILL. You can also join us online at willpledge.com. www.discover.org. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You know, we're told that only 1 in 10 listeners supports this station financially. So there's a lot of folks out there who haven't yet done their part, but we're hoping to change that this week. Become a friend. Become a member of the Friends of WILL. That basic membership, $40 a year. And with that, you'll get Patterns Magazine, which is the program guide, monthly program guide. It gives you all the listings for AM, FM, and television. And also, if you're a new friend, that $10 gift certificate from World Harvest Foods is there for you as well. 217-244-9455, the number to call with a pledge of financial support. We've got one phone occupied, but we've got a number of them that are open, so you can get right in. Be the next to call, 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, and settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. And here with the numbers today, is it Todd or is it Tom?
It's Todd.
Okay, Todd.
I'm here. Dave's not available today. He, of course, is in Casey.
Meeting, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Casey at one of his meetings, the Outlook meetings, one of the extra services that happens here from the WILL Ag programming. So he's not been available. Tom Rogers filling in for his slots earlier this morning, but I'll be here through the closing market report this afternoon to take you through the rest of the commodity market day. In fact, kind of an interesting day. I looked at the markets earlier in the day and the futures were higher, but they've faded quickly at the end of the day. I think around 12:30 they started to fold, and the beans really folded. They're down anywhere between 5 and 13 cents on the end of the day. The corn lost a fairly good substantial amount as well, down 3 to 4 cents. The wheat is down 1 to 3 cents, and the soy complex in general, as I just told you, taking the brunt of the losses. We'll start in Kansas City at the Board of Trade there. They were down 5 and a quarter cents in the July contract today. At a high price of 423, a low at 413, settlement price at 413, off 5 and a quarter. The nearby March contract in Kansas City down 4.5 cents today, 413 the settlement price there. From the Chicago Board of Trade, March contract in the wheat pit at 358 3/4 for the soft red winter wheat we plant here east of the Mississippi River. On the high, the low at 351.5, a settlement price at 351 3/4, down 3 1/4. And the May futures, 370 the high, the low at 62.5, a settlement price at 363 1/4, down 2.5 cents. And July futures, 379 the high, the low at 72, settlement price at $3.73, down 2.5. And September's for 388.5 on the high, the low at 381, settlement price at 383.5, down 1.5 cents. December contract a 401 high, low at 393.5. And D Sweet settled at 395 3/4. They were off 1 3/4 at the end of this day. Of course, wheat futures had been leading the corn and even the beans higher over the past week or so, and they continued to hold fairly firm today. The corn, on the other hand, managed to lose 4 3/4 cents in the nearby March contract at 218 on their settlement price today, with a high of 223 3/4, and that March corn had a low of 17 3/4. Once again, the lead option down 4 3/4 at 218. May futures now 234 the high, low at 228 1/4, settlement price at $2.28 down 4.5 cents. In July's 242 3/4, the low at 36 3/4, settlement price a half above that at $2.37 down 4 3/4. And the SEP corn 249 the high, the low at 244 1/2. Settlement price at 244 3/4, down 3.5. Now that 258 3/4 high, that came from the December contract. The low there at 254, settlement price at $2.54 for the December corn, down 4 cents today. March futures for the 07 contract down 3.5, 260 3/4 the settlement price. The low at 60, the high at 64.5. Oat futures, March contract at 188 3/4, settlement price down 13. The May futures were down 11 3/4 today at 188 3/4. From the soy complex, bean futures finished the March contract like this. 594 on the high, the low at $5.73, settlement price at 587. They were off 12 today. May futures 606.5 the high, the low at 587, settlement price at $6.5, down 13. In July, 616.5 the high, the low at 598, settlement price at 609.75, down 11.75. August futures, 618.5 the high, the low at $6, settlement price at 612, off 9. And September's, 619.5 the high, the low at 605, a settlement price at 614.5. They were off 9.5 cents. November's soybeans, this is your harvest month, 627.5 the high, low at $6.10, settlement priced at 621.75. They were off 10.75 today. January futures down a nickel, 625 the settlement price, the high at 31, the low at $6.16 for the January soybeans. Settlement once again well above that at $6.25. They were off a nickel today. March bean meal, 183 the high, the low at 175.80, settlement price 176.70. They were off $4.30. The May meal off 410 at 179.50 with a high of 85.50 and a low at $79 even. And the bean oil settled like this in the nearby March contract. 22.84 on the high, the low at 22.26. And their settlement price at 22.28. They were off 29. May futures down 24 today at 22.73. I'll return at 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock this afternoon, when we talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. My name is Todd Gleason. Of course, we'll get the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange in just a moment.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Okay, well, cattle finished mixed today on the Merck, while lean hogs and bellies finished higher on the day. March feeder cattle today's high 108.70, the low 107.75, the settlement 107.97.5, that down 7.5. April 109.90, the high 108.95, the low 109.22.5, the settlement that up 2.5. May 109.75, the high 108.90, the low 109.35, the settlement that up 25. February live cattle, 92.45, the high 91.80, the low 91.97.5, the settlement that down 17.5. April, the high today 90.25, the low 89.75, the settlement 89.77.5, that down 10. February lean hogs up $1 today, 56.65, the high 55.90, the low finishing at 56.62.5, again that up $1. April, 62.15, the high, 61.30, the low. The settlement, 61.75, that up 42.5. May lean hogs, today's high, 67.10, the low, 66.60, finishing at 67.07.5, that up 30. And June lean hogs, the high today, 68.95, the low, 68.30, finishing at 68.87.5, up 35. February bellies up 50 today, the high, 77.55, the low 75.70, the settlement 77.40, again that up 50. Let's check now on the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500. Last I checked, those indices were lower. Let's find out what the latest is. The Dow is currently down 46 points at 10,753. The NASDAQ is off 16 at 2243, and the S&P 500 off 10 points at 1255.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
And let me give you a website.